Good morning, and welcome to the Alliance for Fair Trade Media teleconference. The two speakers on today's call will be the AFTI co-chairs Linda Dempsey, Vice President of International Economic Affairs for the National Association of Manufacturers, and Mark Elliott, Executive Vice President of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Global Intellectual Property Center. This call is now on a listen-only mode for the participants. There will be a question and answer session at the end of the call. To ask a question, you may press star then one when prompted. This call is also being recorded. If you will have any objections, please disconnect your lines at this time. I will now turn the call over to Linda Dempsey. Ms. Dempsey, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I think as many of you know, businesses, manufacturers, and industries throughout the United States and elsewhere have been growing in their concern about practices we've seen out of India, particularly in the last 2 years. This concern has been accelerating as we've seen more and more discriminatory, unfair actions by the Indian government that really are designed to help a few Indian companies at the expense of everyone else. In June of this year, the NAM and the Chamber's Global Intellectual Property Center got together with many of our other friends and business associations to form the Alliance for Fair Trade with India. This organization, which has now grown to about 17 organizations that Mark and I co-chair, is very focused on making sure that India returns to policies, returns to reform, and plays fair, that it adopts policies that will level the playing field with the United States and not try to shut its market down and steal our property and take advantage of our companies and the work that we're doing. We have communicated very directly with our administration here as well as Congress. You all saw that the Secretary of State raised these issues when he was in India. Vice President Biden raised these issues when he too was in India. Members of Congress, over 220 members, both Democrats and Republicans, have been raising these issues. And just yesterday, we saw governors from 14 different states raising these basic issues of leveling the playing field and ensuring that our manufacturers, our businesses, are treated fairly in the U.S.-India relationship. This is a big relationship, over $60 billion in goods, a larger relationship when services and investment are included. India is the third largest economy in the world, a middle-income country, according to the World Bank, bigger than Australia, Canada, Mexico. It's an economy where we really want to have a deeper, stronger commercial relationship, but India's actions continue to turn the back on that. And we've seen, even since this summer, an acceleration of India's activities of forced localization and discriminatory policies. In addition to the forced localization policies we've seen for solar, for information and communication technology, discriminatory practices on medicines, medical devices, and other products, India has moved now to propose forced localization for power generation. It has taken more acts against patents of products manufactured here in the United States. We have testified on Capitol Hill. We have shared our concerns both publicly and privately with the administration. And we have seen some interesting activities in Congress, including the introduction just last week by Chairman Lee Terry, who's the chairman of the Manufacturing and Trade Subcommittee of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, who introduced a bill to reform the longstanding generalized system of preference program that we have here in the United States. The reform is a general one. It applies the eligibility criteria and would make eligibility criteria on intellectual property and forced localization mandatory. But what's most striking is what Chairman Terry talked about in introducing this bill, which is really the actions of a country like India, which is, of course, the largest beneficiary of that program, that is taken to upend the U.S.-India commercial relationship. We are looking very strongly to the meeting tomorrow that the President and Prime Minister will have. And we have asked the President to raise these concerns, to ask India to level the playing field, treat our manufacturers and businesses fairly. And we're really counting on the President to make these points and come up with a solution where India returns to policies of reform that will grow its economy and improve what should be a much stronger and more dynamic U.S.-India commercial relationship. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague Mark Elliott for some additional remarks.
Thanks, Linda. I would like to echo Linda's comments, but I'd also like to add that India appears to have changed its course from becoming an innovative nation. In 2010, the then President of India declared the next 10 years to be India's decade of innovation. The business community welcomed this announcement, and they looked forward to investing in India. However, the reality is that a series of policy and judicial decisions undermine global IP rights and the business community's confidence in India. An international, a global index produced by the Global IP Center here, released earlier this year, placed India last behind Russia, Brazil, and China. They were last across almost every criteria of patents, copyrights, trademarks, international treaties, and enforcement. There has been a rapid deterioration in India's IP climate. Aside from the well-documented pharmaceutical cases involving Nexavar, Gleevec, and Sutent, all of which were innovative cancer treatments, there's an array of concerns. For example, in the area of piracy, India lacks appropriate legislation to deal with the sale of camcorder reproductions taken in movie theaters. India is also among the top 10 countries in the world for internet piracy, much of which relates to copyright theft. The recording and music industry estimates a total loss of $430 million in 2011 due to piracy. In 2012, the reform of the copyright bill ignored industry's call for increased IP protection and failed to achieve the intended purpose of the legislation, which was to implement the WIPO copyright treaty. The reported rate of PC software piracy in 2010 was 64% in India, with a commercial value of unlicensed US software in India estimated to be almost $1.4 billion. We have highlighted a pattern of IP rights erosion in the last 18 months. However, since AFTI was established in June, there have been a number of new cases have continued in India, which is disappointing. In August 2013, the India Intellectual Property Appellant Board revoked patents of two Allergan products to treat glaucoma. In July, they revoked the GSK patent on a cancer drug. They denied Monsanto's patent application for a genetically engineered method of increasing climate resilience in plants. For IP-intensive industries, the protection of IP rights is one of the most important factors when considering investing in a particular market. We have heard from dozens of industries and dozens of trade associations representing tens of thousands of companies that the erosion of intellectual property rights will make investment in India difficult. In fact, foreign direct investment in India has dropped from $35.1 billion in 2011-2012 to $22.4 billion in the following year, a 36% decrease. The GIPC released a study in July which highlighted that India attracts less FDI than its BRIC counterparts over the last 20 years, and it has lagged well behind. We are pleased to learn that Chairman Tyagi and ranking members of both the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee have requested the U.S. International Trade Commission to commence a fact-finding investigation into India's trade and industrial policies known as the Section 332. And we look forward to contributing to that process. As Linda mentioned, we are glad to see that both Congress and the administration taken note of the concerns we have raised. And we hope that the same level of attention will be raised during the Prime Minister's visit and the meeting with President Obama. We would like to see President Obama raise these concerns directly with the Prime Minister, and we want to see near-term actions by India to reverse its discriminatory policies and ensure that they are not repeated in the future.
And as many of you may have already seen, this morning we issued a letter from the NAM, the Chamber's IP Center, and 16 other associations throughout the U.S. economy to the President, urging real results on his dialogue with the Prime Minister on these very issues. With that, I'd like to turn it back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Please make sure to record your first and last name when prompted so I may introduce you. That's star 1. At any time to withdraw your question, it's star 2. One moment, please. Our first question comes from Yashant Raj from Hindustan. Your line is open.
In the Sun Times, that's in the newspaper. Thank you so much. My question is about the last speaker who said India needs to take some urgent measures in the near term. Could he specify these measures and so that we know what exactly the U.S. businesses, expect from India? In the near term, IPR and privacy laws are long-term issues. They'll take time, but what does India need to do in the near term? Thank you so much.
We believe that there are a number of immediate actions that India can take. First is to cease and desist from its discriminatory policies. Certainly, it can announce and make absolutely clear in both regulation and law that it's not going to return to forced localization on solar, on power generation, on information and communication technology, that it's not going to discriminate against a wide range of products that are trying to enter the Indian market from overseas. And with regard to intellectual property, there are things that India can do right now, which is respecting the patents that are globally respected around the world, and India is just an outlier, and it can reverse course on any number one of these areas. Mark, would you like to add?
Yeah, I would concur with Linda. I'd just like to also add that there have been a number of cases, and they're quite well documented, with respect to the revocation of patents in India or compulsory licenses. The Indian government will say that these are one-off instances. They are not connected in any way. The point remains, however, that it is only in India that this is occurring. And our view is that if this is bad for trade, it's bad for investment, and most importantly, it's bad for India. In short, it's not our position to tell the Indian government how exactly to address these concerns. Our role here is to point out the broad array of business concerns and issues that we currently have with India on a range of different areas, and we think we are doing that reasonably well. It's up to the Indian government to address these matters.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ben Wolfgang. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for holding this call. I'm curious if this is chiefly a U.S.-India problem or if other nations around the world are kind of experiencing the same thing, and if so, are U.S. business leaders working with other nations to kind of address this on a global scale as opposed to just the U.S. and India?
This is definitely an issue of global concern, and we certainly have been working with others in the broader international business community on this. These actions, as I began my remarks, are really seeking to grow manufacturing, grow a few industries in India, at the expense of everyone else. And the issues you've seen on forced localization, it has to be Indian-made. And we know that there's global production chains on a lot of this information communication technology equipment and others. And so this is having a big effect worldwide. And certainly the gross deterioration on the intellectual property environment, which is the same.
I agree with Linda, and also like to point out, just looking at the pharmaceutical space, if you look at three of the drugs that were either compulsory licensed or had patents revoked, they were European companies.
Okay.
So this goes well beyond the U.S.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Rupshri. Your line is open.
I wanted to know that, you know, like you said, India has discriminatory policies in place, but then, I mean, every country needs to protect their domestic interests, domestic industry, so then, you know, why would you single out India? And, I mean, I'm sure U.S. has these laws, so why would you single out India and say that India has discriminatory policies?
The United States and India, some 65 years ago, really created the World Trading System, what we call the GATT back in 1948, that set out some basic rules of fairness so that all countries could grow in a global economy while keeping, you know, basic rules that they wanted. You know, India itself has agreed to these very basic rules that you don't tell your companies that they have to buy Indian. It's not the type of activity that we do here in the United States. It's not the type of activity that most other countries around the world are doing. India has tariffs that are 5.5 times higher on U.S. products being exported into India. The U.S. market, you know, for many products that India sells to the United States, they're duty-free. Our tariffs are much lower. Our market is much more open. We have done everything to grow and welcome the Indian producers, and India has embarked really seriously on a very difficult program, and one I would add that really has not shown a lot of positive results. If you look at India's economy, its growth rates have really plummeted from about 10% in 2010 to about 3% last year. Investment, foreign investment, which India says it wants to grow its economy, to grow economic opportunity, is fleeing because companies increasingly are not feeling secure. There's an uncertain, unstable environment, and, you know, where some rights are taken in the patent area, every industry that has intellectual property is greatly concerned.
Yeah, I would just like to add that from an IP perspective, the erosion of intellectual property rights doesn't just affect international countries, companies. It affects domestic companies as well. If you look at the copyright front, Bollywood is being hurt just as much as others are. On the counterfeiting front, Indian companies get hurt also. It was only earlier this year where the president of India came out and called for a great more innovation in India, more patents to be lodged. She noticed that India lagged well behind competitive nations when it came to lodging patents within India, and called upon foreign companies to invest more to help foster that environment. We believe that this investment from innovative industries is what is required in India to stimulate an innovative environment in which Indian companies can prosper as well.
And, you know, India ranks quite low, near the bottom of the basic indicators out there from the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, in terms of doing business, in terms of its global enabling environment. India has changed course. In the 1990s, we all saw India embark on a lot of reform, and it lifted millions out of poverty. But it really has reversed course in a very significant way that is hurting certainly industry here in the United States, but India as well.
And I'd just like to highlight an example here, and that's the Gleevec example that had its patent revoked under Section 3D of the Patents Act. In the case of Gleevec, the company involved, Novartis, was giving the drug away free to 95% of the Indian population suffering from leukemia. free of charge to 18,000 patients in India in a calendar year. Indian generic companies now sell that drug back to the Indian population for $2,000 per annum. It's a hard case to argue that that was in the best interest of India.
Our next question comes from K.P. Nair from The Telegraph. Your line is now open.
Hi. My question is for Linda because she's quoted in NAM press release yesterday, which applauded the letter written by 14 governors. I wonder if it struck you, Linda, that of these 14 governors, except for Governor Sam Brownback and Governor Martin O'Malley, all the other signatories are from states which have very little economic relations or economic cooperation with India. The governor of Colorado, for instance, told me when I met him during the Democratic National Convention that their focus is on Japan, Korea, and all that, and I specifically asked about India. And he said that they haven't done much with India. Same thing with Governor Kasich of Ohio, for example. So, I mean, what do you make of it that most of these governors really have no stake in India, whereas states like New Jersey, Virginia, California, which have tremendous stake, they are not signatories to this letter. What is your reflection on this?
What I think is most interesting here is that India has the second largest population in the world, the third largest economy in the world, and yet the U.S. commercial relationship with India is quite small compared to the commercial relationship that we have with other countries. And that's going to be true for many states here in the United States, that the Indian market is very close to products from the United States through tariffs, through other barriers, and now this whole spate of discriminatory barriers. What I think this letter really reflects is that the hope that many of us had in the 90s that India and the United States could grow our relationship commercially has faltered, and has faltered at the steps of the Indian government. Our governors are at the forefront of seeing economic opportunity in overseas markets. I think if there's less commercial activity with India, it's because India has been less open and has been less desirous of that activity.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Somesh Jha. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, I'm Somesh Jha from Business Standard. Thing is that I need to ask you that is the only issue raised by people is the protection of intellectual property? And if so, there's this U.S. immigration bill which is also hurting the Indian information technology companies by impacting visas for highly skilled non-immigrant workers. So, I mean, what do you have to say on that?
Look, the U.S. and India have a broad and deep relationship on a number of different areas. And, you know, I think, you know, there's lots of times we hear in this dialogue, well, the United States shouldn't be doing this or that. Folks can talk about immigration, but I'll say that the NAM is working very hard on comprehensive immigration reform right now and wants to see that happen. But that is really a completely different type of issue. We have had in place global rules on many of these areas. We have had global norms that most of the rest of the world actually respects and follows, and India has deviated quite seriously from that course in ways that are really hurting both the Indian economy, but also industries and the economy here.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Please make sure to record your first and your last name so I may introduce you. That's star 1. One moment, please. We have a question from Steve Minter from Industry Week. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. I was wondering if you have any estimates of what the economic impact on U.S. manufacturers has been from this course change in India.
We're looking into that, but we don't have a figure that would encompass all of the very substantial lost opportunities, the effects of the very discriminatory industrial policies right at this time.
Thank you.
But I will say that it is an issue. You know, we at the NAM represent manufacturers throughout the entire manufacturing sector. And we are hearing these concerns not just from one or two industries. We are hearing these concerns in a very widespread manner.
And I'd like to add that some of this is very, very difficult to estimate. When companies make investment decisions, we know one of the major considerations are the IP standards in that particular country. So it's very, very difficult to estimate what business, what investment India is not getting as a result of poor IPR standards.
And that concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. We may disconnect your lines now.